3 o'clock on Sundays is when you hear from Karen Conti. You hear her all the time here on WGN Radio with good reason. I've been known to call her our legal eagle. Well, all of us call you that, Karen. As always, thanks for hopping on with our show. We appreciate it.
Hey, John, you know, I was thinking, I think I want to nominate you for, like, honorary attorney. You spend so much time with attorneys that you might as well be one. So I think I might just do that.
Does that get me to be able to pass the bar, or do I still have to go take those tests?
I've never known you to pass the bar anywhere, John. Seriously.
That is very true, Karen, and that's a good line. All right, so I brought you here for a couple reasons, but we actually had an interesting text, and I thought I'd ask you about it. I hope I'm not putting you too much on the spot, but obviously we don't know what happened at Guaranteed Rate Field last night, and the investigation will continue. One of our texters was wondering, you know, if one of those people that got shot, you know, if they didn't have health insurance, or maybe, you know, their health insurance doesn't cover everything that happened. Luckily, everyone is okay, right? But, like, if something like that were to happen inside a stadium, is that establishment under some do they have any liability in a case like that? Or do you assume when you go to public places that you inherit all the risks of being out in public? Do you kind of get what I'm asking, Karen?
Yeah. Is there going to be a lawsuit? And if there is a lawsuit, what could the theories be? And I think a lot is going to depend upon where the shooter was, because the last I checked the news feeds, we didn't know that. We didn't know if the shot was coming from outside the stadium or inside. Now, if it was inside and we established that, then I think the ladies would have a really good argument that what happened to the security system here? I mean, I know that they go through your stuff. How did they miss this? They must have missed this handgun or whatever kind of gun it was, and I think that there could be liability there. Now, if it's coming from outside the stadium, there could be some argument that, hey, you're in a neighborhood that has issues, and is there some way that this bullet got through somewhere that it shouldn't have gotten? I think that's a harder argument, because when you're in the city of Chicago these days, crime is definitely a possibility and sometimes a probability.
Yeah.
But I do think it's going to depend on where that gun was.
That makes sense, right? Like, if you go into a stadium, any stadium, you have a reasonable right to expect that their security will prevent weapons from being inside there. If you're in an open field of any area, I think it's an unreasonable ask to ask a stadium to prevent bullets from flying into the sky, from out of the sky, if that happens. And I think that's kind of
true. And then there's another aspect that you learn in law school, which is you can't hold some organization or company liable for the criminal acts of a third party, generally speaking, meaning, you know, the cause of these shots was the guy who shot, not the Sox, right? But if you had reason to believe, if the Sox arena had a reason to believe that someone could have a gun in there, then, and they took measures, but they didn't take those measures seriously, or they breached the duty to search, then you can hold them liable. So there's all these competing theories in the law that would go into effect, and it's all very interesting.
Yeah, it is. And we'll have to wait and see what the investigation ends up showing up. Okay, I want to get into this Kia and Hyundai story, because I kind of find it bizarre, Karen. I don't see how a city, on behalf of some of its residents, can sue automobile makers for not having certain features on their cars when it's not the car dealership's fault that people are stealing them off the streets. Do you agree with that? Or let's start at the beginning. What is the lawsuit alleging?
Well, it's alleging just that. It's saying that, hey, Chicago, we have to respond to all these 7,000 people who have had their car stolen. And, hey, if you guys had installed more serious anti-theft technology on those cars, we wouldn't have had to respond and people wouldn't have been out of work. So there's so many problems with this lawsuit that I will tell you that I think it was brought in order to make a point and perhaps to get the two car makers to actually put safety features on rather than to get compensation. And here's why. There's a problem with standing, which means, you know, you can't bring a lawsuit unless you're affected by it. And yes, Chicago is affected by it, but who's really affected by this? The 7,000 people whose cars were stolen.
Right.
They didn't bring the lawsuit. The city brought it. Can the city bring it on behalf of citizens? Not really. That doesn't make any sense. And so the other question is the damages that were caused. Again, this is what I said about the prior story. Who were the damages caused by? It was caused by the carjackers. not by the car maker. They didn't do anything to steal the car. So I think that's a real problem. And is it foreseeable that if you don't put a certain anti-theft technology, and apparently TikTok had some videos about how to steal these cars, which I guess exacerbated the problem. You know, how is that reasonable? How is that foreseeable that when you're making a car, you have to be held responsible for it being stolen? I think this is a stupid lawsuit that is going to be tossed out before it even gets to the court.
Yeah, it also alleges that they deceptively assured consumers that vehicles possessed advanced safety features despite, quote, knowledge of the critical defects and its consequences. If they announce advanced safety features like roads, technology that keeps you from hitting the car in front of you, I don't think any buyer goes, well, I have some bubble around my car that means it'll never be stolen. That seems like a stretch.
It does seem like a stretch, but you know how this is judged from the law standpoint is what is the national standard? You know, that courts will look and see what do other car makers do? Are they similar? Do they have similar standards? And I'm sure that there are standards in the industry that have to be met, right? And if they met those national standards, then, you know, the fact that they didn't go that extra 10 yards maybe is not going to matter.
Right.
Everything is judged when it comes to duty based upon what are the standards in place at the time and did they meet or exceed them.
So what you're also suggesting with the standing thing is like, okay, if these 7,000 people came together for a class action lawsuit, they may not win, but they might have a better chance than the city on their behalf acting as a litigant here.
I do agree with you on that,
yeah.
Because then the money would go to them. You know, the idea that the city is asking for money, again, I'm guessing they're not really interested in the money as much as they're trying to make a point here that consumers need to be protected in this day and age with all this crime going on. I mean, my cynical mind is saying, City of Chicago, maybe pay more attention to arresting these people and preventing these kind of things and putting them in jail and hopefully deterring others from doing it rather than doing this kind of silly lawsuit. I really don't like this lawsuit at all.
Maybe it's a new way to balance our budgets, Karen. We're just going to sue a bunch of people and get some lawsuits, and then we can then we're even. Then we're back to square one. Okay, I do want to talk about this, just this tragedy in Hawaii, and people want to know what happened, right? I think, obviously, we want to get down to the bottom of how this thing started, and there is now a lawsuit being filed, Maui essentially suing against a Hawaiian electric company over damage caused by the wildfires. I guess, you know, don't we have to determine exactly what happened first before blame can be assigned? And then once it is, can an electric company, a utility like this, be charged or held liable for something like this?
Yeah, I think there is a rush to the courthouse when it comes to these things. I think lawyers, you know, I'm not disparaging lawyers because lawyers are doing things that are going to help people hopefully rebuild. But yeah, I think what they're doing too is they're rushing to the courthouse to get a leg up, but they also want to preserve evidence. They want to make sure that they're on the cutting edge of what is going on. So when those determinations are made as to what caused the wildfire, what might have exacerbated the wildfires, that they are there and ready to preserve that evidence. And interestingly, in California back in 2018, there was a wildfire, a really bad one, and a bunch of people got together on a class action and sued the electric company. And I don't know what the exact allegations were, but they actually settled for $25 billion.
Whoa.
So there is precedent for these kinds of lawsuits. And my understanding is what the allegation is that because the electrical system was not shut down when the wildfire got to the electrical lines, that it caused the wildfires to increase in velocity and volume. That's what I understand. And what the electric company is saying is that, hey, we don't have an automatic shutdown provision. We have to provide electricity until we're told otherwise, and no first provider told us otherwise. And therefore, and by the way, all the watering and sprinkling systems are generated by electricity.
True.
So if we turn it off, that could have hurt the whole situation even more. So I think there's going to be a fight on this one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to follow that. To that first point you kind of made about is this a rush to court, but maybe it's to preserve evidence. I guess what I want to make sure I understand is that the idea is, if it, let's say it takes a year to figure out what the actual cause is, during that time, you know, maybe evidence is let go of or not found, that by getting this into the court system, the discovery process by potential plaintiffs in the future is preserved. Do I kind of understand that?
You are sounding so much like a lawyer. I'm telling you, John, you got it down. I mean, yeah, you see this in airplane crashes, and you think, oh, those greedy lawyers, they're jumping to the courthouse. But they do it for a reason. They need to be in on all of those investigations that get done. And you can't subpoena records, and you don't have access to accident scenes and all the testing that gets done in the black box and all of that, unless you have a lawsuit on file. So my guess is that's exactly what's going on here.
I have so many questions about what happened in Georgia with our former president and a lot of these defendants. We don't have time for all of them. And honestly, it's a nice Saturday afternoon. Like, I don't want to dive too deep into it. But I like one note that you sent to producer Ridian about merchandise going on sale with former President Trump's mugshot. Can you legally use a mugshot for profit? What a great question you've posed on the email. So what's the answer, Karen?
And this is all just technical analysis, the owner of a copyright is the person who created it. So technically, my understanding would be is that the Fulton County Sheriff's Department would be the technical owner of any copyright if they chose to actually register it. But because if you take something that someone else did, you really can't copyright it because you weren't the creator. So that being said, I think anyone could do anything with this. I guess what I should say is the Fulton County Sheriff's Department is not about to bring lawsuits over the use of their picture. That's just not going to happen. I do think, though, that if Donald Trump wanted to bring a suit saying you cannot use my likeness, my picture, to make money, that would be a successful lawsuit. And we saw that. Remember the Michael Jordan case where Dominic's actually put his number on some advertisement saying he gets free discounts on Neat or something, and congratulations to Michael Jordan for, you know, whatever. And he brought lawsuit and he won because they were using his likeness, his image, his number, and you can't do that without compensating somebody. So, and Donald Trump, we have yet another reason to go into court on this one.
Oh, boy. I got about a minute left or so, maybe 2 minutes. Here's what I want to know about this Georgia case. There's a lot of defendants. I know that the district attorney wants to try them all at once. They have two different things going on. Some of these defendants want to move this to federal court, which could delay things. You have other defendants that are filing for their right to a speedy trial. How the heck are they going to manage this if they want to try them all at once, with some people trying to move it up and some people trying to move it back?
Yeah, I wonder if this is a concerted effort. I don't know why the two defendants wanted a speedy trial, because a speedy trial, they have like millions of documents and phone calls and five states and 19 defendants. How are the lawyer going to look at all these materials, get ready for trial, and try this case in 60 days? That just, I don't see why they are asking for it, unless they want to put the prosecutor to the test and say, listen, you're not going to be ready. We're going to just throw this out there. I think the two arguments, the two defendants who want to get it into federal court, have a decent argument that they're from a different state and that they don't have to be tried in a state court. And that would mean the case would have to be severed as to those defendants. Clearly, the prosecution wants it all set, all done together. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Okay. I left you 30 seconds for a tease for tomorrow. What you got on, Karen?
I have a criminal profile who's going to be talking about the Gilgo Beach murders. It's a case that I have followed for years, and now they've arrested a former police chief in the Gilgo Beach area who they suspected to be the killer at one point in time and still might have something to do with these murders, and we're going to pick his brain about whether that's true.
You are a radio professional as well as a professional lawyer. Great timing, Karen Conti. I appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much. And we got Patrick Dolan, your law partner, joining us next week just to even things out. Karen,
Hi,
have
Pat.
A good one, okay?
Hi, Patrick. Take care. Everyone have a nice weekend.